The Boston Sunday Globe, January 6, 1895. Christian Science has shown its power over its students, as they are called, by building a church by voluntary contributions, the first of its kind, a church which will be dedicated today with $250,000 expended and free of debt. The money has flowed in from all parts of the United States and Canada without any special appeal, and it kept coming until the custodian of funds cried enough and refused to accept any further checks by mail or otherwise. Men, women, and children lent a helping hand, some giving a mite and some substantial sums. Sacrifices were made in many an instance, which will never be known in this world. Christian scientists not only say that they can effect cures of disease and erect churches, but add that they can get their buildings finished on time, even when the feat seems impossible to mortal senses. Read the following from a publication of the new denomination, quote, "One of the grandest and most helpful features of this glorious consummation is this, that 1 month before the close of the year, every evidence of material sense declared that the church's completion within the year 1894 transcended human possibility. The predictions of workmen and onlooker alike were that it could not be completed before April or May of 1895. Much was the ridicule heaped upon the hopeful, trustful ones who declared and repeatedly asseverated to the contrary. This is indeed, then, a scientific demonstration. It has proved in most striking manner the oft-repeated declarations of our textbooks that the evidence of the mortal senses is unreliable." End quote. A week ago, Judge Hanna withdrew from the pastorate of the church, saying he gladly laid down his responsibilities to be succeeded by the grandest of ministers, the Bible, and science and health with key to the Scriptures. This action, it appears, was the result of rules made by Mrs. Eddy. The sermons hereafter will consist of passages read from the two books by readers, who will be elected each year by the congregation. A story has been abroad that Judge Hanna was so eloquent and magnetic that he was attracting listeners who came to hear him preach, rather than in search of the truth as taught. Consequently, the new rules were formulated. But at Christian Science headquarters, this is denied. Mrs. Eddy says the words of the judge speak to the point, and that no such inference is to be drawn therefrom. In Mrs. Eddy's personal reminiscences, which are published under the title of Retrospection and Introspection, much is told of herself in detail that can only be touched upon in this brief sketch. Aristocratic to the backbone, Mrs. Eddy takes delight in going back to the ancestral tree and in tracing those branches which are identified with good and great names, both in Scotland and England. Her family came to this country not long before the Revolution. Among the many souvenirs that Mrs. Eddy remembers as belonging to her grandparents was a heavy sword, encased in a brass scabbard, upon which had been inscribed the name of the kinsman upon whom the sword had been bestowed by Sir William Wallace of mighty Scottish fame. Mrs. Eddy applied herself, like other girls, to her studies, though perhaps with an unusual zest, delighting in philosophy, logic, and moral science, as well as looking into the ancient languages, Hebrew, Greek, and Latin. Her last marriage was in the spring of 1877, when, at Lynn, Massachusetts, she became the wife of Asa Gilbert Eddy. He was the first organizer of a Christian Science Sunday school, of which he was the superintendent. And later, he attracted the attention of many clergymen of other denominations by his able lectures upon scriptural topics. He died in 1882. Mrs. Eddy is known to her circle of pupils and admirers as the editor and publisher of the first official organ of this sect. It was called the Journal of Christian Science and has had great circulation with the members of this fast increasing faith. In recounting her experiences as the pioneer of Christian Science, she states that she sought knowledge concerning the physical side in this research through the different schools of allopathy, homeopathy, and so forth, without receiving any real satisfaction. No ancient or modern philosophy gave her any distinct statement of the science of mind healing. She claims that no human reason has been equal to the question. And she also defines carefully the difference in the theories between faith cure and Christian Science, dwelling particularly upon the terms belief and understanding, which are the key words respectively used in the definitions of these two healing arts. Besides her Boston home, Mrs. Eddy has a delightful country home 1 mile from the State House of New Hampshire's quiet capital, an easy driving distance for her when she wishes to catch a glimpse of the world. But for the most part, she lives very much retired, driving rather into the country, which is so picturesque all about Concord and its surrounding villages. The big house, so delightfully remodeled and modernized, from a primitive homestead that nothing is left excepting the angles and pitch of the roof, is remarkably well placed upon a terrace that slopes behind the buildings, while they themselves are in the midst of green stretches of lawns, dotted with beds of flowering shrubs, with here and there a fountain or summer house. Mrs. Eddy took the writer straight to her beloved lookout, a broad piazza on the south side of the second story of the house, where she can sit in her swinging chair, reveling in the lights and shades of spring and summer greenness, or, as just then, in the gorgeous October coloring of the whole landscape that lies below, across the farm, which stretches on through an intervale of beautiful meadows and pastures to the woods that skirt the valley on the little Truant River as it wanders eastward. It pleased her to point out her own birthplace. Straight as the crow flies from her piazza, does it lie on the brow of Bow Hill. And then she paused and reminded the reporter that Congressman Baker from New Hampshire, her cousin, was born and bred in that same neighborhood. The photograph of Honorable Hoke Smith, another distinguished relative, adorned the mantel. Then my eye caught her family coat of arms and the diploma given her by the Society of the Daughters of the Revolution. The natural and lawful pride that comes with a tincture of blue and brave blood is perhaps one of her characteristics, as is many another well-born woman's. She has a long list of worthy ancestors in colonial and revolutionary days, and the MacNeils and General Knox figure largely in her genealogy, as well as the hero who killed the ill-starred Pagus. This big sunny room, which Mrs. Eddy calls her den, or sometimes mother's room, when speaking of her many followers who consider her their spiritual leader, has the air of hospitality that marks its hostess herself. Mrs. Eddy has hung its walls with reproductions of some of Europe's masterpieces, a few of which had been the gifts of her loving pupils. Looking down from the windows upon the treetops on the lower terrace, the reporter exclaimed, "You have lived here only 4 years, and yet from a barren waste of most unpromising ground has come forth all this beauty." 4 years, she ejaculated. 2.5, only 2.5 years. Then, touching my sleeve and pointing, she continued, "Look at those big elms. I had them brought here in warm weather, almost as big as they are now, and not one died." Mrs. Eddy talked earnestly of her friendships. She told something of her domestic arrangements, of how she had long wished to get away from her busy career in Boston and return to her native Granite Hills, there to build a substantial home that should do honor to that precinct of Concord. She chose the stubbly old farm on the road from Concord, within 1 mile of the Eaton of America, St. Paul's School. Once bought, the will of the woman set at work, and today a strikingly well-kept estate is the first impression given to the visitor as he approaches Pleasant View. She employs a number of men to keep the grounds and farm in perfect order, and it was pleasing to learn that this rich woman is using her money to promote the welfare of industrious workmen, in whom she takes a vital interest. Mrs. Eddy believes that the laborer is worthy of his hire, and, moreover, that he deserves to have a home and family of his own. Indeed, one of her motives in buying so large an estate was that she might do something for the toilers and thus add her influence toward the advancement of better home life and citizenship.